This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida. And guess who's back?
I'm here. I made it. I'm off the mountain. It's Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 22nd, episode 1457, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way.
It feels that way to me because I was working all weekend at that, you know, went to that conference, so it kind of feels like I've had 40 hours in already this week.
Well, you haven't, so suck it up, Buttercup.
Oh,
you got a little ways
talking.
To go.
Look who's talking, miss. I'm going to extend my vacation on a mountain.
Yeah, that was so relaxing and fun. Stress-free, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, I will. You were just with a child and horses with no hay and food. What? I mean,
oh my gosh.
You ask for a lot in life, Jamie.
I'll get to the reason for cross-country schooling, but like seriously, that was ridiculous. And again, grateful I was not involved in the accident or stuck in the massive traffic delays, but there's one road home pretty much from Flagstaff to Arizona when you have a horse trailer, and it's the freeway. And the freeway was shut down, and this is a good thing it was national news because otherwise you wouldn't believe me.
It must have been a hell of an accident. That's a wide freeway.
I don't even want to describe what happened on here because it'll just ruin the show. Yeah. So anyway, so the freeway shut down at 8 a.m. At 7 p.m., it was still not open. So we decide, all right, we got to find another way.
You did not get into the traffic at all?
No. Pretty much most people that were in Flagstaff at this event just stayed. And they were going to leave, you know, later in the day. And I thought, well, I'll leave after dark anyway because we're going down the mountain and basically it's 85 up here and it's 120 in Phoenix. That was the day it was 120 degrees in Phoenix. So we didn't want to drive in the daytime anyway, so it was no big deal. Well, the freeway was still shut down, so we had to head 40 west and we were going to go through all these little towns, but one road that was further away because it didn't have switchbacks going through the mountains. Super stressful, right? And I get on I-40, I get the horses loaded up. We get the stalls all done. You know, dump the waters. Everybody gets in, trailer in, kids in. And I head out on I-40 West to go. And I get a traffic alert on my phone that the route that I have chosen has been shut down due to too much traffic.
Jeez.
And I don't know where I'm going. It's dark. I've got three horses in my three-horse trailer and a kid and a dog. I can't deal. But what am I going to do? So I turn around and I go back to the horse show. I had only gotten about half an hour out. So I turn around and I go back to the horse show. And I have no food. I am out of hay. I am out of everything.
And you say, well, why don't you just go to the Walmart next door? Because there is no Walmart next door. It's the South in the middle of nothing.
Well, it's not that I didn't have. I was more worried about the horses. I can go hungry one night, but you don't want your horses to go hungry, especially after a weekend of cross-country schooling. So anyway, just the amazing generosity of everybody around. Fed me, fed the dog, fed the horses, fed the kid. Everybody had food, and it was just really a nice thing. I mean, when I pulled back in, I was swarmed with people trying to help me unload and get the horses back in the stalls, and filling up waters for me. It was really, really cool. So I do appreciate all the help that I got from all the people. Love my fellow eventers. Cheers.
That is one nice thing about most horse sports, but especially eventing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So anyway, that's that story, boss. And so, of course, then I try to do my show the next morning with a sleeping kid and a basset hound and 3 horses and the cell phone won't work. And I'm like, I can't.
She gets up early. We get her on the phone and she's like, this. It's like, I can't do the show. You sent like that.
Oh, so annoying. It's annoying listening to you do that. So sorry about that. And I tried.
Well, Jennifer covered for you. We managed. We got through it. She did.
So
good job.
Since I tried, do I get paid for that episode?
You got up. We probably should pay her, Jennifer. She at least
partial credit.
Yeah, that's right. Give her 5 minutes pay. She gets 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. Jennifer, please
79
tell
cents.
Us.
It's yours.
Yeah. We have such a cool show coming up. What's coming up on today's show?
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, the Rio Olympics are right around the corner. So eventing team reserve just named, Elisa Wallace is going to join us and tell us all about how excited she is. And then mid-show, the Haggard Horse Health Report is going to answer listener questions about pre-purchase exams. And then rolling across the finish line, the velvet voice of Victoria Spicer has the European Report compliments of Horse and Country TV. So stay tuned for the pay, folks.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Appreciate it. And for everybody that's watched, I did a little Facebook Live this morning. By the way, I'm liking Facebook Live better than Periscope because the recording of the video is much better quality than Periscope. Okay. And I did a little video this morning of Scooter playing with his Jolly Ball, and we give him treats in it every morning because he has to stay in separated from Nigel because we have an issue there. So so he has to stay in for half a day, and he gets his little Jolly Ball, and he takes and beats the crap out of it to get the treats out. And everybody's asking where they can get one of those balls. Well, it's a regular Jolly Ball. Only thing is Jennifer cut the hole bigger in the bottom so that actual horse-sized treats would fit.
Ah, because I was just thinking I needed to do that for Zeus.
Yeah,
but he has a plain jolly old Jolly Ball.
Yeah, but you cut the hole bigger.
Chopped a big enough hole that the treats would fall out of it easily. Yeah,
because you want the treats to be able to come out. Otherwise, they just get frustrated and don't do it anymore. But every morning you put the ball in there, he's like that. He picks it up with his teeth, and he hasn't figured out to pick it up with the handle. He picks it up. He grabs it like crazy along the side with his pony, teeth, and just beats the crap out of it till stuff falls out. So. So if you're wondering, that's what it is. It's a Jolly Ball with the hole cut bigger.
Cool.
For everybody that's commenting on that video.
And Jolly Ball, you can send us that check, please.
Yeah. That'd be that's a commercial right there. Daily Winnie time. Well, this Daily Winnie goes out to all of our Colorado listeners, and we know there's a lot of you out there. We have some auditors who are from Colorado. We have a lot of friends in Colorado. We're gonna be coming to Colorado, and actually, we're gonna see Betty Faye. Jamie got
really
a horse from Betty Faye. Betty Faye's gonna take Jennifer riding in the mountains.
Oh,
so,
I bet you wish you had the Duke now, Betty Faye.
I don't know. She must have a horse that Jennifer can ride because she volunteered. So she's going to take you because I said, I don't really want to go riding in the mountains. And Betty Faye said, well, I'll take Jennifer riding in the mountains. And I was like, cool. I'll find a helicopter ride in the mountains. That'll be perfect. Cool. So that's going to happen. But we're doing a meetup in Colorado for listeners and friends and anybody who wants to come out. The Colorado Horse Park 3-A-Day event is happening the weekend we're there. So on Saturday, the 17th of September, we're going to be attending Cross Country Day. Christy Landwehr, who did the show yesterday, she does a Certified Horsemanship Association show. She lives right there near the park. She's going to join us for the day. And whoever can come out that day, we'll do a little meetup. We'll watch cross country together, have some lunch together. And I've never seen the Colorado Horse Park. It's supposed to be pretty spiffy.
Oh, I want to go.
So you'll have to come out, Jamie. It's not that far, only about 20 hours. You'll be fine. You can get there.
Easy drive.
It's only through the mountains. You know, you're good at that now.
Yeah, so. I'm a pro.
So we wanted to mention that. We'll announce more about it as we get a little bit closer. But we hope that we get to see some of our auditors and some of our listeners. And we're looking forward to it. We've never been to Colorado. So we're looking forward to spending a week in Colorado in September.
I just want to send a little shout out, a little Daily Winnie to Untappable. And prepare the sound file if you please have it, because Untappable was the champion filly that was ridden
by... Which sound file?
Rosina Pravnik. So I wanted to give a little shout out because I know that I loved Untappable and you loved Rosina Pravnik. And this is the horse that she rode and then announced after she won the distaff, Breeders' Cup distaff, that she was pregnant and like stole the thunder from the actual horse winning got on this thing. Oh, by the way, I'm pregnant. I'm out. Peace, and dropped the mic and walked away. So this is, I just thought it was worth mentioning that Untappable is retiring, but she does have a 2-year-old full sister named Untapped, a yearling full sister, and a full brother that was born April 26th. So
really,
they are
that's
gone.
Highly unusual. Wow.
It's like Barbaro. Yeah. It's like, let's keep doing it. Let's keep trying again. Let's try again to find one of those. Cause she was, like
you run out of un-T names after a while, because how many un-T names are there?
Untippy-toe. I don't know. Like, what do you do? Keep going.
Well, what sound file was that, by the way?
Rosie's a really good rider. That's what I was hoping for. Because you met Rosie Napravnik. I mean, you met Rosie.
It didn't go well. I lost my steam for Rosie.
Do you still have the autographed Rosie Napravnik picture?
That you gave me. I do have that. I did not burn it after I met her.
It's her darts at it?
No, I don't. I still have it because you gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I have it to this day.
Well, we're going to get our guest on here in a minute. Do you want me to give you the recount real quick of the cross-country schooling?
Yes, you took a couple of your wild Mustangs out for cross-country schooling.
I know, I did. And just real quick, before we get Elise on, I'll just tell you that I took Zeus and Thor. This is a fundraiser, so I got to teach some cross-country clinics while I was up there, and I got to go up in school for free. That's kind of what you get out of it. So I taught my lessons, and then I'm like, I'm gonna ride the hard one first, and then I'm going to ride the good one. So I head out on Zeus. The newest one, the one I've had pretty, because of my broken foot, been training for less than 2 months. And I took him out and I just was like, I'll just trot him around the pre-comp stuff and let him. He's never jumped a cross-country fence. I didn't know how he was going to be. He was amazing. He jumped everything on the pre-comp course, and pre-comp is like 2 foot. You know, he wasn't jumped that much, and he just, I don't know, he just took right to it. He was amazing. Really,
I watched
really
a video of him going through the water. It was like, no hesitation whatsoever.
None.
I'm just plowing through everything.
None.
Yeah.
So
you might have found a calling for that boy.
I know. And so then I'm like, I'm going to go get on the good one now.
On the other hand.
let me just go ahead and bless Thor's heart. Bless his heart. He just, he's very brave. He's just not that talented.
Poor Thor.
Thor, you know, when I first started riding him, he had that little issue with being a bit of a runaway. And so, he was a bit of a runaway. And about 10 minutes into the cross-country schooling, this woman looks at me and she goes, "Man, he's like a freight train." Funny enough, that was his name when I got him.
Well, you know what? If you think about Thor in the movies, Thor was never very gentle. He kind of like used the hammer and just destroyed everything. So,
that's pretty much what he does, bless his heart. There's no finesse whatsoever. It was jump and bolt. And he would bolt to the next fence, but it was just really, really frightening. So we ended up having to switch bits, ended up doing decent afterwards. Then I went back out on Zeus the second day. And I'm not kidding you, where Elisa Wallace said that her horse Win was a freak, this horse is a freak. There's no video of it because I was going too fast. Let's just say that I started at the beginning of the beginner novice course, which is 2.26, you know, a little higher than 2.6, and just galloped the entire course. And he did not look at anything. He did not put a foot wrong. He just charged all the way down the mountain. It was crazy. He was so good. So the bottom line is, I was going to enter Thor in a horse trial that is happening on the 9th and 10th of July. and I switched my entry, and now Zeus is going to go in the horse trial.
By the way, the horse trial is appreciative that they won't have to buy new jumps after your...
I know, bless his heart. Thor, like I said, Thor is great. I love him. I'll have him forever. He's just, I love him more than anything. But Zeus is actually super talented. So we're going to stick with him for a little while. When I realize how expensive these things are, I'm like, well, we'll just enter one. But so there you go. Lil Zeusie is going to his first horse trial. And again, he's going to have been in training by the time he competes. Been in training for 2 months with me. So well, we'll see how it goes.
You know, there's somebody else that's super talented.
I know. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, I would like to introduce you all, to your reserve United States Olympic team member for the 2016 Olympic Games, Alisa Wallace.
Oh my goodness, really?
So that I
was pretty epic.
I was thinking you would be like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, that was great. You're like,
I'm
whatever.
Like teary eyed. I'm like crying.
Sure.
Want me to play the music again? Will that help?
Yeah.
It makes me cry. No, I'm being serious.
Well, just play the music underneath our interview the whole time.
The whole time.
Oh my God, no.
Alisa, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is amazing. Amazing, amazing. So, obviously what I just said, for those who don't know, Alisa has been named to the reserve United States Olympic team. You are a reserve of the Olympic team. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's very surreal. Like, you just, I don't know. It's weird. It's really cool. Of course, I want to be like, oh, it comes with so many emotions. It's been a long thing since Rolex and stuff has, you know, you can't really talk about things. It has to be under wraps and, but then you don't know what's going on. And so it's like the people that you can tell, it's like, what's going on next? I'm like, I have no clue, guys. You guys know as much as I do. So, to finally like get the news and the announcement, it just was a wave of relief really. And then it's like focused on the next goal. So
you're going to head up and train with the team, right?
Yes, yeah, so I was up there for a week last week to get in, and we had like the Olympic vettings and stuff like that, and so that's just nerve wracking as it is because horses are horses, and Johnny's a little bit older, and so but that all went well, and I ended up getting drug tested too, which that was interesting.
I guess you passed. You made the list. So
well, yeah. It's harder to pee in a cup than you think, though.
Especially with the Olympics on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, especially when you're nervous. And then, of course, like someone's watching you. So you have to go in and you have to be watched while you try to pee in a cup. And for us girls, it's like not an easy thing. Anyhow, had to come up with 90 milliliters. And
so it's like the horses, they have to wait for hours while you're sitting in there, you know. Trying.
Well, yeah, so like I was only able to give a partial sample, so then she had to like follow me around while we were finished up with Johnny, and like it was like I ended up peeing all over my hand and all this stuff, and I was just like, oh my goodness. And then I had to, so it was only a partial sample because I could only come up with 60 milliliters because I was so shaky I probably shaked all the urine out of my cup. And then I had to then sit there, and I drank a lot of water and then did the vetting. And then I was like, okay. Then the second time, I was much more relaxed because I had developed a relationship now with the woman who was watching me pee. So then I was sitting there, and I'm like peeing in the cup, and I'm like, I'm going to fill it up to the top this time. And so filled it up to the top and went in there. And you have to go through and like pick cups and open up. It's very like open seals, check seals. It's very procedure-y. And so I go there and I got my cup and I'm like, yeah, filled that one all the way up. What? And he's like, all right, pick a cup. And I'm like, what? Why do I have to pick another cup? And he's like, well, there's too much urine in that sample. And I was like, ugh. So we ended up, like, they mixed it, and it was fine. But it was pretty fun, like, for an awkward kind of nerd, like, very scenario, it was fine. But that's part of the procedures, because I guess people have cheated it in the past. So, yeah, you have to, like, it's serious stuff. You have to take a shirt and fold it up under your bra and pull your pants down mid-thigh in front of someone. So, there
oh
you go.
Gosh.
That's an insight.
Jeez.
Yeah,
totally.
We were warned about it too. Like, we were shown slides back at the convention of these stick figures and what what happened.
This is where you put.
So
the
I kind of had an idea. So yeah, that was my little peeing adventure for the Olympics thing.
Okay, Lisa, this is why we love having Alisa Wallace on the show, because
exactly.
She provides us terrific entertainment every time she comes
behind
on.
The scenes.
This
behind
is
the
funny.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, you want to know what happens. I mean, that's the real stuff that happens. So, but okay, so back to more serious stuff. So yeah, this past week I was up there and I trained with Karen and David, and we did the vetting, and then we got the news. And
what's the vetting? What does that mean?
The vetting is where the Olympic, the veterinary panel for the USA puts the horses through vetting. So they watch for soundness. We lunge the horses, we jog them, we flex them, we X-ray and ultrasound them. You know, make sure that we know everything about the horses, so we can do the best to maintain them and just have as much information about the horses as possible.
So I mean, this would probably be like a vet check that would cost thousands and thousands of dollars, right?
Yes. But it's all, yeah, that's all paid for by the US. So now that, now I decided I'd come back home for this week and kind of get things reorganized, and then I'll go back up there, because I just want to take advantage of this moment and the ability that I can have in training and being around, like, really have time to focus, because, yeah, I can't always just leave my farm. So this is a great excuse. So I can just take Johnny, go up there and focus for, like, 2.5 weeks. And really, because the next goal, since I'm just an alternate, so that doesn't mean that I'm going to Rio, but if things were to happen, which, you know, horses stuff can, but
so basically if somebody walks up to Philip Dutton's horse and kicks him in the knee, Johnny could be in.
Well, Philip's got 3 horses.
Yeah, I was just going to say they've loaded up on those, on the horses. I
boys
noticed
got
that.
2. Now, honestly, like, that's the team that I had picked out in my head, was the exact team.
Let's go over that real quick.
What happened is,
we haven't done that with the audience yet. We got Philip Dutton, we got Lauren Kiefer, we have Boyd Martin and Clark Montgomery.
And my good friend, Maya Black, who's kicked booty all year, she is the traveling reserve.
Which means she'll go with her horse?
Which means she will go and take and wave her little flag. And that's it. If everybody stays fine, but if, say, someone gets shipping fever or something like that, and then she would be in.
Got it.
So you would be a reserve if something happens before everybody goes to Rio.
Right. So what happens, now we have this mandatory outing at Great Meadows, which is going to be amazing. It's the Nations Cup as well. And so it's going to, I mean, Great Meadows does an amazing job there up in Virginia. And so we get to take the horses, and we'll be in training with David, and it's a CIC 3-star. So, I mean, it's nothing to sneeze at. Like, and so my goal is to have Johnny, you know, I want to go kick. I want to be like, look at me. We are awesome, you know. So because after Great Meadows, then the final, the concrete, the confirmed team has to be confirmed July 17th. So that means things can move around. After July 17th, the only thing that can change is if you put your reserve horse in a spot for a team member. That's it.
So Maya's horse, Maya Black's horse.
Right. Well, okay. So now what is, if something's to happen, say if, I don't know, like one of the horses or the rider combination can't do anything, then Maya would move into that spot, and then someone from the pool of the whatever I am, a reserve, would come into the traveling reserve spot, and then that's how it trickles down.
So it is important, actually, that you do well at this next show. If you won this next show, then you're going to be higher on the list of the reserves, theoretically.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think if you go out there and, you know, you do really, really well, then I always try to go out there to compete to give the selector something to think about. So. Mm. Mm-hmm. And the thing with me and Johnny, which I'm always shocked about, like thinking of last year, and that I was just thankful that we did Rolex, and I thought that was going to be it. And then, you know, like we went and did Blenheim, and then I was like, okay, so I guess we'll go do Rolex again. And then I was like, you know, sorry for the little customer, but shits and giggles, I'll put in my application for the Olympics. Like, why not? And then we did well at Rolex, and it was like, we just keep kind of creeping along. We're like right there. So that's kind of, and it was just like when I got the news on Monday, I was relieved. And then it was later on in the day, and I took Johnny out for a walk, and I just like lost it and started crying. So I might get emotional again. But I don't know.
Well, let me tell you something. I recorded the Horse Husbands episode, which will be out tomorrow, with your husband last night. And he is one proud hubby.
Yeah, I'm lucky. It takes I have to really screw up in order to disappoint him.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, this is about as high as a husband can experience, really. So congratulations. This is just, I know you've worked your whole entire life for it. Tell me how your dad's feeling.
Oh, my dad is like super excited, and I mean, it was a dream of his to go to the Olympics. And so like he tried back in 92 to go to Barcelona, but his horse ended up getting hurt. But so it's kind of always been like, I can never think of a time when I was a kid and like the Olympics weren't something that I wanted to do. So yeah, he's super proud and all that stuff. Like I think he was a little confused when I got the results, and I was just kind of like dumbfounded, like a little bit like, yes, okay, moving on. And he's like, aren't you excited? And I was like, well, yeah, but and I just kind of process some things differently sometimes. Like I don't always just like jump up and down, you know, or like a lot of my friends are like get super duper excited, and I just kind of take it in. And then, cause then I want to focus on the next thing. But then I kind of get really emotional and I'll just lose it because it just kind of all builds up and goes crashing down.
This is why us men cannot figure women out.
Well, you see, you just take good notes from Timothy because he's great, because I am very weird and he does a great job of managing me. So he just goes along with the flow.
Well, he is a philosopher, a doctor in philosophy, so that helps.
Yeah, well, the philosopher part isn't technically like allowed in the house. When he goes into philosopher land, I'm like, mm-mm, we're not doing that right now. No.
He does it on the show occasionally, and I have to remind him. I have to say, Timothy, this is Horse Husbands, not class.
No, come back down to earth. We're not doing that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, random side note. Do you play that Indigo Girls song for him all the time? You're from Georgia. You've got to know what I'm talking about, right?
Which song?
Where they're like, I went to see the doctor of philosophy. That just popped into my head.
Maybe I haven't heard that song in forever. I should probably play that. It'd be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Closer to Fine. That's what it's called.
No, I mean, he's a huge support. And, you know, he understands that when I like need to focus, and I just know that everybody who I'm surrounded by, like, are super supportive, and you know, when I'm like freaking out, I have someone I can call and talk to, or when I'm having a bad day, or just, you know, our sport's frustrating. And so kind of now the goal is, like I said, to just take advantage of all the education that I can get. And it, I mean, it's great. I don't just go up there and have lessons. I like to go and watch. So I'll watch, you know, David, you teach Lauren, and 'cause you can learn just as much from watching. And so that's really
like,
this is like
a mega free clinic for you coming up.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just how much you want to take advantage of that. And the focus of doing well at Great Meadows. And if it doesn't work, if I just end up being, the alternate and I don't end up going to Rio, which, you know, with horses, we always have to have plan A, B, C, D. I mean, this is, the plan would be to aim for Burley over in England, which is in September. So, you know, that's another huge goal and accomplishment that I want to get under my belt. And so either way, it's a win-win. So it's just really cool to be, that I can sit there and say, I am nominated for the Olympics. It's pretty awesome. So,
man,
I'm slowly ticking those things off of my bucket list.
So what makes Elisa Wallace, before I let you go, what makes you freak out? Because it doesn't seem like much does.
Well, just kind of like the health of my horses. Like I spend probably like 15 hours when I just have Johnny. It's just like me and Johnny. And so I'm like, oh my God, he needs to eat, or he wants to eat. He needs to go for a walk now. Or what's that bump? Or, oh my gosh. Like, so it really is just about like, I freak out about my horses, I think, the most.
Yeah.
And that's probably it. Just the horse, like the horses, everything else. I'm easy. I can take care of like whatever. That's fine. But, I just get excited for the competitions, and I've because of the Mustangs and stuff, they've really helped me, I think, learn to deal with pressure and how to stay patient under that type of pressure. I mean, like, there's nothing compared to when you take a Mustang you've had for 120 days into a packed Coliseum with just a rope around its neck. So, I mean, I feel like that is very equivalent to where I go out on my highly trained horse in the middle of like the Rolex Stadium with however many people are there. It's very similar. And it just gives you this feeling of, I don't know, I really enjoy that. And, so yeah, maybe one day I'll have a Mustang on the list. That would be fun.
Amen, sister. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Hit it, Glenn. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from United States Olympic Team reserve member, Elisa Wallace. And we wish you the best going forward. And we'll see you there in 2020.
See you, Lisa.
Thanks so much, guys. All right.
Bye,
you guys
Elisa.
Have a good day.
Congrats.
Bye. Thanks.
You can hear Dr. Timothy, Elisa's husband, on the show tomorrow morning as we present our horse husbands episode.
I think she used to like me, and now she doesn't like me anymore. I thought we were friends.
Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury, as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries, is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
And we are very pleased to welcome this morning Dr. Barrett. Good morning, Dr. Barrett.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us again. I know we've been had the pleasure of talking to you a couple times. So this topic that we got actually came from our listeners, and they were curious about pre-purchase. Is this something that you deal with a lot?
Yeah, it's a pretty big part of my practice, actually.
Okay, because you do a lot of the sport horse stuff, so you probably do a lot. Now, we were just talking to Elisa Wallace about all the inspections and vettings and all the stuff that you have to go through if you are going to be, you know, considered for the Olympic team. And you're an FEI vet. What kind of stuff have you dealt with that?
With the selection process?
Well, obviously, I don't know if you're one of the selector veterinarians, yeah. But you've probably done a lot of the FEI vettings and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. As a treating vet, it means I'm allowed to go and look at horses and treat them before competition. I'm not one of the official veterinarians, so I'm not involved in the selection process, but certainly I'll help out when they have the jog. So when mm-hmm. the official vet is watching, if they think one might be a little bit off, they'll have me pull it out and I'll examine it and see if there's a reason, or if it really is truly off, or it was just the horse was jogging and playing around a bit funny, and it was hard to tell. So I'll be involved in that aspect of it for sure. And then, kind of the reason why you have to be official vet is because there's obviously really strict rules around what drugs can be used, and if a horse isn't feeling well, we kind of report all that back to the official veterinarian as well. So I'm not quite involved with the really strict things, but everyone has a pretty big responsibility when they're working mm-hmm. on those competition mm-hmm. horses.
Now, talk to us a little bit about pre-purchase exams. What is it? What do you look for? And what are some of the things that, well, just give us the kind of the definition of it first.
Yeah, yeah. So a pre-purchase exam is just that. If there's a horse that someone's interested in buying, for whatever reason, they'll have a veterinarian go and check it out and make sure that horse is going to be able to perform or kind of do the whatever duties it is that they want that horse to end up doing in the future.
And so what kind of
vary?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that can vary wildly, right? It can be a horse that someone's buying because they want to, a young horse that they want to train up to make it to the Olympics someday. It can be a horse that they just want to come and live happily as a pasture mate for their current horse. And obviously, there'd be different levels of concern and different things that you would look for in each of those situations.
Gotcha. Okay. So when you begin a pre-purchase exam, kind of walk us through what you do.
Yeah. So I was taught really early on, and it's something that I've kept, is every time I do a pre-purchase, it doesn't matter the horse, it doesn't matter the situation, I do everything in the same order, and that way I don't miss anything. I have a really nice form that I kind of fill out as I go along, and that helps keep me on track too. I also just go based on the horse, start at the front, work my way back. When I first get there, I'll just watch the horse in the stall, kind of see if they have any bad habits or, if they crib or do things like that. Basically just while I talk to the current owner, ideally both the current owner and the future buyer will be present. That doesn't always happen, but I basically just try to get some history on the horse and find out, what it's done, what it's doing now, if it's ever had any health issues in the past, if they do any maintenance work on it. I know Courtney talked to you guys about hawk injections and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I just try to get a really good picture of the horse overall. And then once we've kind of finished up with that, I go in and just do a really thorough physical exam. I check the eyes, teeth, listen to the heart, lungs, and palpate all the limbs. And I try to make sure that my hands basically touch that horse everywhere, looking for scars or if they've had colic surgery or if they can see normally, don't have any cataracts and things like that. And then some people will end my exam there. They don't
really.
That's all they want to know is if the horse is healthy. Yeah. But then typically the normal thing would be to then go and watch the horse move. So jog them and flex each of their limbs to see if there's any problem or sore areas. And then either lunge them or have them be ridden by a rider to see how they look in that different situation as well. And that's probably for me the kind of normal progression. That's, you know, baseline what I would do kind of on every horse. And then from there, there's kind of additional things that, again, it's very case dependent, you know, whether we pull blood on the horse, take radiographs, or ultrasound, any structures or if there's any concerns, things like that. Those would be kind of additional things that we'd do from there.
Okay, so as far as radiographs go, these are listener questions. What are the absolute must-have, you know, first things you'll do during a pre-purchase as far as radiographs go?
Yeah. So certainly if something comes up in the exam that's concerning, like say a horse flexes really strongly to a fetlock, then, you know, I'm definitely going to recommend to x-ray that fetlock. You know, depending on the cost of the horse, you know, the buyer has to, that's their decision. They have to weigh whether or not they want to spend the money to take radiographs in comparison to the cost of the horse and the risk it might be that we might miss something. So not everyone takes radiographs for sure.
Okay.
There are definitely some situations, you know, where it's a young horse that they want to move up, or the cost of the horse is, you know, significant enough that we just routinely do a full set of radiographs. So basically x-ray the whole horse. And then there are other situations, you know, where people maybe can't spend that much money. You know, if I have like a baseline when I'm talking to someone and they say, you know, I have this much money and I want to x-ray something, what should I x-ray? And say there's nothing that really stands out or is glaring, for sure I'm always going to recommend the feet. Just like we talked last time, that's where the majority of lameness issues come from in a horse. And
okay.
Things can kind of lay silent and hide there. And it's also a good baseline to have just for the farrier, for trimming and things like that. So that would be, I don't, my style is really not to push people to spend more than they're comfortable with or to do more than they're comfortable with, but that's one, the one area that I'll certainly encourage people to radiograph.
The feet. Okay. Now I know that, first of all, just for those who don't know, a flexion test is, give a definition of a flexion test.
So they're basically, you pick up the horse's leg and, say if you're doing a distal limb flexion, so you're flexing the fetlock and coffin joint, you just grab the foot and put pressure on it for, you know, 30 to 60 seconds. Or you flex the knee or the hock, and then trot the horse off immediately. And say if a horse had arthritis in the fetlock joint and you flex them like that, then they would trot and appear, you know, pretty lame, at least, you know, for a certain number of strides.
Which is basically what happens to me when I get up. Okay, so like I would not pass a pre-purchase if I'm sitting here, like right now I'm sitting on my foot and I go to stand up and I'm like, oh God, I can't walk. So I would fail a pre-purchase, but that's basically what it is if you sit on your knee and then you go to stand up, oh my gosh, I'm lame.
Yeah.
But then you shake out of it and you're okay.
Exactly. And I will say that to people. So again, you know, a 3-year-old horse probably shouldn't flex at all. But a 50-year-old horse that's being used and ridden quite heavily, they'll probably flex for a little bit. And I don't mind seeing that. That doesn't bother me at all. But if, you know, if I flex them and they jog all the way down and back and are still pretty lame, then that's obviously a concern.
Gotcha.
So, you know, depending on the case, you kind of have to use the, each situation is a little bit different, whether or not it's a concern.
Is a pre-purchase exam on an off-the-track thoroughbred different than what you would look for? Are there certain things you look for on an off-the-track thoroughbred versus other horses?
I do the same exam regardless of the horse. Certainly in the back of your mind, if you know you're looking at a thoroughbred that's raced, there are certain issues that you would look more carefully for, I guess. So you know they're more prone to having, you know, fetlock arthritis or possibly chips in their knees, things like that. We have a really great organization across the street from us that we do work for called the Makers Mark Secretariat Center, and they retrain and rehome a lot of thoroughbreds. They're really great people. I love it over there. I love looking at the horses. Mostly because the people that are coming to buy off the track thoroughbreds know that there's going to be something. These horses have worked really hard for who knows, a couple of years. And so they're going to have tiny issues. And so the people do the pre-purchase exam basically so they know going forward what level that horse can reach comfortably and what things they might have to sort of help the horse out with to help them get to that level. So it's almost, you know, those buyers don't go into those exams thinking that I'm going to not find anything on the horse. So they can be really interesting and it's cool to see what those horses can do even with the minor issues that they had.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, another question from one of our listeners was, how do you recommend choosing a veterinarian if you're purchasing a horse in a different part of town or out of state and you're not familiar with any of the veterinarians in the area?
Yeah. Obviously, if you're looking at a horse in Lexington, Kentucky, you can just call me. So that's very easy.
That's a simple one. How about rural Nebraska?
Rural Nebraska. So equine veterinarians are a small community. We kind of, a lot of us know one another. So, you know, if you have a regular vet, I would definitely approach them and ask them. I think I mentioned before, the American Association of Equine Practitioners have a listserv where vets will email cases and questions back and forth. And oftentimes I see people post, you know, I have a client that's looking for a pre-purchase in this area. And other people will make recommendations of a vet they know there that does a good job. I think that's probably the best way to do it.
I never would have thought about talking to my own vet. You know, that's a good idea.
Well, I love it when I'm doing a pre-purchase for someone and they have a regular vet that I can go back and say, these are my findings. I can send them the radiographs. So a second set of eyes looks at the radiographs as well. And then oftentimes the buyer's much more comfortable because they're familiar and know their vet so well. So I can speak to both them and their vet and they're getting the information back from both of us.
Okay. That's definitely good. So call your own vet, people. So the last question that I have before we get to Glenn, do a large percentage of people draw blood for drug testing? Or is that something you standard do?
It's pretty standard. The situations where I don't draw blood is where there's kind of a pre-existing relationship where the people are really comfortable with the seller.
Okay.
Say a place like Maker's Mark, you know, it's a very reputable organization, so people don't necessarily worry about that there. I do have some people that will also draw blood and hold it. So we pull the blood so that we have it if we need to. If there's an issue, they say that comes up in the next 6 months or so.
Gotcha.
The only problem with that is that has to be written in the purchase contract, because if there's nothing in the contract that you have and say the horse comes lame in 6 months and you come back and try to tell the seller, well, I'm going to give this horse back to you because it had this issue and it was given bute during the exam. Unless it's in the contract, then you can't really return the horse.
Gotcha.
That makes sense. Well, we're speaking to Dr. Barrett, who's with Haggard Horse Health, and with our Horse Health Report. She's in Lexington, Kentucky. I have one final question for you, and this comes from our own Dr. Wendy Ying. She's a veterinarian, and she hosts our driving radio show. She says, why at the end of a pre-purchase exam, when your vet says, run the other way, do clients buy them anyway?
I think we touched on this a little bit last week. there are definitely horses that I get to and the people are already so attached to that horse that it doesn't seem to matter what I say or what I find.
I think she knew the answer. Just she thought it was funny when she wrote it in there.
Oh, my gosh.
It happens a lot.
You know, Jennifer used to do that too. She used to go out as a trainer and they used to hire her to go out and look at the horse, ride the horse, and then she'd come back and say, this horse is not for you, and they would buy it. You know, just it happens to trainers all the time too. You've probably done it, Jamie.
Yeah.
Well, the client in my backyard, the little paint horse, he failed the vet check in 15 different ways. Failed. Feet, hocks, back, everything. Just a disaster. And they bought him anyway. And my vet was like, do not buy this horse. Whatever you do, do not. Well, it was a little girl. She loved the horse. We got a deal on the things. And we were able to put that money into keeping him sound and blah, blah, blah. So then they're going to get a second horse. Oh, they love this pony. Oh, my God. And they go, should I get a vet check? And I go, why the hell would you get a vet check? You're not going to listen anyway. Like, save your money. And I'm like, even if the horse, like, your other horse failed a billion ways and the vet actually said, do not buy this horse, he will not last.
Which they never say.
I've never heard a vet more clearly say, don't do it. They're like, we'll take him.
Now, when you first started, Dr. Barrett, did you take that personally? And now have you just kind of gotten immune to it and it's whatever anymore when they don't?
Exactly.
Listen?
That's
exactly what happened.
I used to really worry. And then I was like, you know what? That horse is now in a pretty loving home. They want him. He'll be fine.
Well, that
and
is
then they're
going
to come to you for vet work anyway.
Yeah, so. Right.
Exactly.
It's a win-win.
She knows
for
the
you.
Horse. He's lame. She told us why he was going to be lame. Let's go call her because he's lame.
As a veterinarian, my own horse had a pretty significant issue that nobody else would ever buy it on a pre-purchase exam, but I figured I could deal with it since I was a vet.
Well, you know, that is true, too. I never thought about it that way, that, they ended up in a loving home. Jamie, this horse is being well taken care of that you have, right? So,
well, now he's mine.
Exactly. You inherited him back.
I inherited him.
Is that Chili? Is that the one we
hear
the Winnie for?
Oh my gosh, Chili. That's Chili. He's the one who's like, he's such a disaster. Such a disaster. And they're like, okay, we don't want him anymore. What can we do with him? Well, nothing. Like nobody, you can't sell him. You vetted him 10 years ago and he failed then. He's going to never get past anything now. So like, what can we do with him? Oh God, I guess I'll take him. Fine. So yeah, that's Chili. But y'all, Dr. Barrett, it's been awesome talking to you. These are great pieces of information and we do appreciate you coming on. Haggard.com is the website and you can find their Facebook page at facebook.com/Haggard Equine Medical. We do appreciate it, Dr. Barrett. Have a wonderful day. Go pre-purchase
Thank
something.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thanks, Pass Dr. It. Barrett.
Just for us.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Haggard Equine Medical Institute in Lexington, Kentucky and Wellington, Florida has been treating racehorses, sport horses, and beloved pasture ornaments for 140 years. With some 30 ambulatory doctors, 24-hour emergency care, full surgical suite, dedicated sport horse facility, wide range of proven therapies, and full-service pharmacy, Haggard offers everything your horse needs for the proper diagnosis and best treatment. Visit Haggard.com for more information, or you can call them at 859-255-8741. Follow Haggard Equine Medical Institute on Facebook or on Twitter at Haggard and receive health alerts and the latest information on keeping your horse healthy and happy.
Well, you know, we've been talking about a lot of stuff. I never thought we'd be talking about peeing all over the place this morning. I never thought that would go there with Elisa this morning.
She's
and
so
now, now we're talking about you have a story about drug testing too.
Yeah, well, they were talking about it on the auditor page and that question with the what percentage do you find draw blood for drug testing was an auditor question and my answer was every time. You draw blood every time. Just the horse that we pre-purchased for a client of mine a couple weeks ago, the vet said to me, are you comfortable with the seller? Do you want to draw blood? And I was like, hell yeah, draw some blood and keep it 6 months. So what your veterinarian will do is they will just draw a couple tubes of blood and put it in the freezer. Because what happens is say like you have this nice, calm, quiet horse. And in 30 days, you have a monster. Well, what happens is, unfortunately, people use a drug called reserpine, which is a 30-day tranquilizer. So, you know, you just want to make sure that you have that. And then other things like bute and banamine. So I had a very easy, no big deal pre-purchase done on a horse when I lived in Kentucky. And the horse was sound, passed everything, no problem. And the vet said, do you want to draw blood? And it was not the most awesome place to buy a horse. So I said, well, yes, please draw blood. So 30 days, maybe not even 30 days, like 2 weeks later, the horse comes up super lame. And x-rays revealed some navicular changes and all sorts of stuff like that. So I called the seller and I said, hey, what's the deal? Did we have any navicular? Oh, no, I don't know what happened. But like, obviously, these changes had happened a long time ago. So we pulled the blood out of the freezer, tested the blood in the freezer. There is positive for bute, positive for banamine, positive for one other, I think aspirin, another pain med. So I went back to the seller and I was like, now we didn't have that. I didn't even have a contract. So that's probably a better idea. But I called them and I'm like, hey, we got all this stuff going on here. You want me to throw this out to the world or do you want to give me my money back? And they were very smartly decided that they were going to give me my money back and I got to keep the horse. So I got the lame horse. But the good news is I knew what to do. I had a great farrier who was able to shoe him in a way that kept him sound. So I ended up eventing him for quite some time and then sold him to a wonderful home, a Hunter Farm in Georgia when I lived there. So anyway, it definitely draw blood. There's your happy story of the day. I got to keep the horse and I got my money back.
There you go. It's good you had those blood tests. You wouldn't have had any. You'd have got to keep the horse, but you wouldn't have got your money back.
No, yes. Exactly. So always draw blood. Always draw blood.
Very cool.
Put it in the freezer.
Well, there you go. There's Jamie's words of wisdom for the day.
Jamie's that girl moment of buying a lame horse.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to play. I'll play a little Katie Drake. We had her on the show last week, and I have another one of her songs. You haven't heard this one before, called In Your Shoes. And then we're going to come back. We're not sure if we have Victoria today. We thought we were going to have her. She said she was going to be here, but I know she's also at a horse show. So we're going to try and round her up. If we can't round her up, we have some lists for you and some news to do anyway. So we'll be back after this.
If I could live one day in your shoes, to know exactly what it's like to be you, to know all the problems you go through, to be you. I'd like to live your life for a while, to truly understand what makes you smile, to share in all your joy, all of me, all of
understand. finding a way to understand you, sharing a love that's true. If I could live one day in your shoes.
You can find all of Katie Drake's music at, just search for her on iTunes. Just search for Katie Drake and you'll find all of her great music. She has a lot of songs on there. And we're
love
happy,
that one.
Yeah, we're happy to add her to the list. By the way, it was Geraldine Brown was the listener last week that I was trying to remember, talked to us about Katie Drake and loves her and recommended her. And I couldn't remember who it was. It was Geraldine Brown. So thank you, Geraldine.
We and Katie's that. A horse chick?
Yeah. Yep. Remember, she was the Pirelli. They had worked for Pirelli. And all of that.
Well, we're not going to hold that against her. Yeah,
I was. Were you here for that?
I was. Yeah, I'm okay. Just, you know me. Forget my show the minute it's over.
That's right. Well, we have a couple of serious notes here before we go on with the show. And that is, one of them is equestrian Frank Chapeau, who probably is one of the biggest legends we have in the horse world here in the United States. He had many firsts. He was in the 1956 Olympics in Stockholm. He was the youngest rider on the U.S. equestrian team. He competed six times in the Olympics in 1964 in Tokyo. He was the first one to ever compete with his wife. Mary Chapeau became the first husband-wife combination to ride for the U.S. And it was Chapeau who led the U.S. to its first team equestrian Olympic gold in Los Angeles in 1984. He did six Olympics. We can't even begin to mention all the other things he did and the contributions he made to the U.S. Team after his competition days and all the different things that he did. But, you know, he'll be remembered. Certainly, there's a certain horse he's remembered for too, right? You found out this morning.
Yeah, I read this morning. I did not realize he was the breeder of Jim Twist. And if you don't remember Jim Twist, the most beautiful gray show jumping monster. He was amazing, ridden by Greg Best. And I had a poster of Jim Twist in my room growing up. That's the kind of posters I had. Some people have dream boats. I have Jim Twist. But Jim Twist and Greg Best were, you know, the show jumpers. I just didn't realize that he bred Jim Twist. How cool.
And he apparently died at 84, and so we wish his family the best, and certainly he will be remembered as
amazing
all-time greats. Yep.
Yep.
One other thing, too, is that poor paint-covered horse that we've been covering for so long. It's 35-year-old horse that ended up going to
35?
35. That ended up going to John Stewart's place. If you remember, we ended up at an auction in New Holland and it was covered in paint. Everybody thought it had been paintballed, and that, in fact, wasn't the case. It had been used by children for, you know, paint a horse day at the barn.
Really? I thought it was sprayed with paintballs.
No, the owner ended up coming out and saying it was used at a Pittstown, New Jersey farm as a canvas for children's finger painting parties. And then she actually gave it to the dealer who she said she assumed was going to euthanize her. Now, why she didn't do that herself is the big question. This dealer was the one that then took it to New Holland and got convicted of animal cruelty. So that's how that all happened. This horse then ended up at John Stewart's farm in New Jersey. His wife has kind of a little sanctuary there. And unfortunately, the horse, was kind of frail anyway, but apparently took a fall and ended up breaking its neck. And we've, you know, we've had a horse slip and hit the side of a building and break its neck. One of our border horses, as a matter of fact. So we know that kind of thing can happen. And especially when a horse is 35 and had a tough time. So, you know, that we just wanted to give you an update on that horse as well. We also want to give Rachel, one of our auditors, a great big hug. She lost one of her lifetime horses last week. And she, you know, from all of us here at Horses in the Morning and the Horse Radio Network, you deserve a great big hug. And we all know how that is. So we know what you're going through. So that's my sad news of the day. You have an interesting thing here. It was an email that was sent out by Monty Roberts. And I want you to read the whole thing because I did not know this.
Oh, this one's really cool. Monty Roberts, if you join his, he does a emails a question that people can ask Monty questions, and he emails the answers out every week. So that you get a weekly email from him, and they're really, really interesting. And this is something you brought up, actually, but it's really interesting to read his answer. So here's the question. I feel like I'm doing the Ask Monty like I do on Debbie's show.
Yeah. Actually, Jamie does read these questions and answers for Debbie's Horsemanship Radio show. So,
yeah.
So make She's believe like, well, you're baby. Doing it, okay? Make
okay.
believe you're reading.
Dear Monty, there are probably many trainers
who
claim to
be... She does start
it
that way, too.
I do! Even though it's not written down, I just thought it was cool. Dear Monty, there are probably many trainers who claim to be the true or original horse whisperer. The Horse Whisperer movie is said to be not the movie about Monty Roberts' life, but of that of another person. Edit, cut. Sorry. That's what I have really happens. That person is said to be Buck Brannaman. Can you please give us a clear answer about that? Monty's reply. Please let me address this first question by telling you what actually transpired after I met Queen Elizabeth II in April of 1989. Her Majesty requested that I visit 21 separate UK cities. The Queen herself set up the people to host demonstrations in these locations. And during my meeting with the Queen that April, she strongly requested that a book be written about my work. So I began to write The Man Who Listens to Horses. Do I sound like Monty? How am I doing?
You do not sound like an 85-year-old man. I don't know how to answer that one.
He's 81.
Oh, 80. Okay. That's right. I didn't know how to answer that one without getting in trouble. So,
okay. During my 21-city tour, a man came to me from the audience at Duchy College in Cornwall, England. He introduced himself as Nicholas Evans. He said that he was impressed with the demonstration and was motivated to write a book about this experience. I did not take him seriously on that evening, and about 2 weeks later, I received a telephone call while in California. Once more, I was visiting with Nicholas Evans. By the way, that's the author of The Horse Whisperer, for Glenn, who didn't know
Thank
that.
You.
In the next few days, I was in contact with the Queen, who adamantly asked me not to get involved with a novel. She wanted a book from me that was truthful and accurate. I informed Mr. Evans that I was not available for endorsing or advising on a book about my work. He was clearly not happy with me and said that he would contact a man that I knew very well. This man was an American called Tom Dorrance. Mr. Dorrance communicated with me that he had read the manuscript and was not interested in assisting in the writing of the book nor the production of the movie. He told me that at that time he was recommending one of his students called Buck Brannaman to help with this effort. Later, I was to learn that Mr. Brannaman was chosen and did assist in setting up some of the scenes for the movie called The Horse Whisperer. Later, I was contacted by the Disney Corporation, who had purchased the rights to the movie. They asked me to attach my name to the book and the movie as an endorser of the contents. The Queen very strongly advised me against doing that, so it didn't happen. You should note that I do not whisper to horses anyway, and the man responsible for the term, John Solomon Rary, from 1827 to 1866, worked for the Queen's grandmother, Queen Victoria. Sincerely, Monty.
Did you know all of that? I did not know all of that.
I did know that because when I did that 2-week Gentling Wild Horses course, somebody asked him about that. So that's the only reason I knew about that. But that is, what's amazing is, like, you know, you think of Disney as the almighty powerful, but nope, Queen. Queen wins.
Yeah, you know, when the Queen tells you not to do it, you pretty much don't do it, right?
Well, you think about it too. Like, that movie was terrible. I'm sorry. The movie was not about training horses. It was about this horse trainer who starts sleeping with some little girl's mama.
Right.
And cheating on the husband. It was a terrible movie and a terrible book. And the part about the horses, the fact that he has to lay the horse down, like, it's just, and it, the horse went crazy after an accident. It just, the whole thing is complete crap. Sorry, Nicholas Evans. I'm sure you're a nice guy, but I hated the movie and I hated the book. And
when
I thought it was just
come
about
out? Adults. Buck Brannaman must have been a kid. I mean, pretty young.
Well, and I love Robert Redford, who was in the movie and I believe directed the movie as well. And I think he's a great guy and he's a horseman and he has done a lot of stuff with Buck, including Buck the film since then. And so they developed a relationship, obviously. But I think what Monty said in that class was that he highly advised Buck not to lay the horse down. They actually, I guess, communicated before or after or during or something about it. And he was like, dude, not cool. But anyway, it worked out and whatever.
Well, you got to have drama when you're making a movie. So
movies. God, did anybody like that movie? I mean, Scarlett Johansson was adorable in it. And turns out she's like a super movie star. But like, I'm sorry. I think that the girl was terrible and the dad was terrible and the having sex with each other was gross. And
tell us how you really feel, Jamie. By the way, that movie was made in 1998. I thought it was earlier than that. So Buck wasn't probably as young as I thought he would have been at that point. But he was still a student, apparently, of Tom Dorrance. And I can see why Tom Dorrance didn't do that movie either, because he's kind of more Monty-like. So, yeah. Interesting. I just didn't know that. I thought it was interesting for everybody to hear because there's always been talk about, you know, everybody always assumed it was about Monty. And I guess in a way, in the beginning, it was kind of about Monty.
Yeah. So yeah. I think he inspired it. But I mean, like, why would you? Okay. Hey, I'd like to do a movie about a guy that cheats on his wife. Would you like me to make it about you?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Definitely not. I want nothing to do with that. I think it's a terrible idea. But for those who enjoyed my reading of Monty's, we'll be doing a question on episode 67 about single line lunging. And I believe I did another one for episode 68. So about horse trailers. So check it out. It's the Horsemanship Radio.
Well, speaking of celebrities, Uma Thurman, of course, Pulp Fiction and all of that. Everybody, I think, knows who Uma Thurman is. Apparently had a nasty fall from a horse and broke multiple bones this week.
What?
Yeah, she apparently rides horses and she was in an equestrian accident. Her agent said she was training on a young thoroughbred who spooked. She was thrown and broke a few bones. So she apparently is not out and about right now because she got hurt. Getting thrown. Did you know Uma Thurman was a horse person?
I did not.
We got to add to our list of celebrities for the Radiothon. You know, with all of these new celebrities we're finding out about that ride horses, we should be able to get one of them.
It says she was training on a young thoroughbred who got spooked. She was thrown and broke a few bones. So she must be a horse chick if she's like riding young thoroughbreds because they're not going to, you know, if it was for a movie or something.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting.
Now reason to like her even more.
There you go. Now, do you guys, it is Crappy List Wednesday, so I have one here for you. This is from horsechannel.com. Oh, by the way, I do have to say that Christy West, who used to do the Horse Health Report with us when we first started the show 6 years ago, Christy came on for thehorse.com and did the report with us for a couple of years. And then you remember she retired to go off to be a skydiver.
It was actually really easy when she did it because she just interviewed the vet and we just sat there.
We just sat there and she did everything. She says hello. I got to see her over the weekend at the HP. Aww. And she said to say
what's she
hello.
Doing now? I thought she was skydiving.
She still is. She still comes back. Apparently she works on the website for the HP and she loves all of her old horsey friends in the journalist community. So she's on the board and she comes back and helps with that. But when she went to this place in Texas, it's called a jump zone where they do skydiving. She's in charge of the marketing. They had one. Now they have four in Texas. So she said the company's growing like crazy and she's thoroughly enjoying and still competing in skydiving. She says, we still are invited to come down and skydive anytime we want. So just thought
that's because she knows we'll never take her up.
Yeah, exactly.
How about did you ever go to horse camp? I know Jennifer did. Did you ever go, Jamie?
Oh my gosh, Little Hope Ranch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was called Little Hope Ranch.
Is the name of the horse camp?
It was named Little Hope Ranch. Is that the worst name ever? Little Hope is surviving.
The worst
that
name ever.
It's honestly true. You had little hope of coming out of there unscathed. I went there for several summers, and then I did a pony club, which was you spent one weekend there a month. And not to tattle on anybody, but there was a few weekends where I was the only one there.
Really?
And so I was like 10 at a camp by myself, like feeding the horses, and just, I might have been 12. I don't know. Yeah, Little Hope. I loved it.
That's funny.
Love the place, love the people. Nightmare. Do not send your children there. Sorry, this is probably way off topic.
Marketing nightmare, the name alone. Little Hope Ranch. That makes you want to send your child.
They should call it A Little Hope. Like, you got a little hope.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But no, it's just Little Hope.
Only in Georgia. All right, so I have this article from horsechannel.com called 9 Reasons You Definitely Shouldn't Send Your Kid to Horse Camp.
Oh, God. This is going to be good.
Now, it is kind of sarcastic. All right. So, 1, your child will be exposed to horses she'd never otherwise ride.
I rode a Shetland pony named Pepito. And when the camp started to close down, he was terrible. Like, stop. You'd be going along, finally get him to canter, and then you'd stop and you'd
and
fly off. Oh, he'd stop and duck his head. You'd go straight to the ground. That was the one that the camp gave us after they closed. So I had him until he died. Little Shetland pony forever. Yeah, I would never have ridden a naughty pony like that.
It's so funny. The article says your child will ride Tennessee walking horses, retired hunter schoolmasters, idiot greenies, ponies, draft horses, albino Mustangs, and grade horses of indiscriminate background.
Mm-hmm. This place had mainly Arabs and ponies. So, Little Hope. Little Hope.
Well, the 2 reason that you shouldn't send your kid to horse camp is your child will be exposed to many different styles of riding. Your child may learn about dressage and may run around the barn aisle practicing her first whinny widgets test on foot. Maybe she'll learn to cinch a Western saddle, about eventing from her Kiwi riding trainer, or about trail etiquette from the barn manager. And obviously, this is all being written very sarcastically.
Jennifer, did you go to pony camp?
I did go to pony camp. I did.
And was it like this, or did you go to a specific type? Because you're a pony clubber. I was never a pony clubber.
The only pony camp I ever went to was run by the DC of our local pony club.
Okay, so you like had...
I signed up for every single week, so I was at pony camp for the entire summer because I signed up for every single week. So I kind of just moved into the tent in their backyard and stayed there the whole summer. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So your child will lose the fear of ick. No longer will your child fear ick. So obviously you realize that these are the reasons to send your kids to pony camp. Three words, camping with horses. And Jennifer, that would be your 3 words, right?
Yeah, because that's the only camp I ever went to. I never went to anything else. I was either pony camp or nothing. So there you go.
I almost drowned at church camp once. So apparently yours was better than mine. Your child will come back fearless because they've ridden all of those horses.
I'll never forget something somebody said to me.
Yeah.
When I was trying to get Sunshade to canter on the trail, and Sunshade would not canter, and I had a crop, and I was repeatedly tapping Sunshade on the butt with a crop, and this girl looks at me and she goes, "Don't you start a fight you can't win." And I've never forgotten that saying ever.
That's like, good for horses and people, isn't it?
Yep. Don't you start a fight you can't win. I was like, okay, I'm going to stop hitting this horse now.
You know, had it not been for pony camp, I would never have been introduced to eventing, though. I had never,
yep.
I didn't even know what eventing was when I went to pony camp. You know, I was completely clueless. And they had a little itsy bitsy teeny weeny cross country course. And, you know, we learned what a dressage arena was and stuff. And I'll never forget going over my first ditch jump. I was hooked. That was it.
God, you learned a lot more at your pony camp than I did.
Yep. And I was hooked. That was it. Cross country was it. I found my calling.
I wonder how many girls at Pony Camp do find what they want to do, because you do get to do so many different things.
Yeah.
You found out that you didn't really want to ride ponies the rest of your life.
Yeah, ponies. And we did, it was ponies and Arabian. Sunshade was a Pinto Arabian.
A Pinto Arabian.
Yeah.
There's a combination.
A Pentabian, if you will. Yes. And they had all Arabian horses and a couple ponies. And oh my gosh. Like I said, I remember I took my pony to camp the first time I ever went there, and they kept going. And I had only ridden Western, and this was an English camp. And I was riding Snowflake with an English saddle, but I didn't know how to steer. And they kept going, "Don't neck rein. Stop neck reining. Don't neck rein."
That had an effect on you, didn't it? No neck reining allowed in Jamie's world.
Well, but the problem is they never taught me how to direct rein. And I remember going, how the hell do I steer? You know, but of course I was like 7 and was afraid to ask. So just, I got yelled, "Don't neck rein," for like an entire week. And now when I have Western converts of kids that come over and want to learn to ride English, one of the first things I do is teach them how to direct rein, because in my brain, I will never say, "Stop neck reining." God. You're bringing up some, like, I'm getting chills.
I'm exercising demons.
I think we struck a chord here, Glenn.
You know,
I'm just jealous of Jennifer's camp.
You know what else we struck a chord with? I don't know if you noticed this, Jamie, but was it yesterday, Jennifer? We posted, it came up a conversation during the CHA show about the oddest thing your horse has ever spooked at. And oh my God, did we have comments on that one? There were some odd things that people's horses spook at. Tammy said a dozer, a big yellow monster. Well, I think a lot of horses probably spook at the dozer, right? That's alongside the road, especially if it's working at the time. How about wet grass? Joy's horse spooks at wet grass. I don't know. They're out in wet grass all the time. You think that wouldn't be a problem. Here's one. Butterflies. Spooks at butterflies. Mini horses and Clydesdales. I think mini horses has to be one of the most common things that people horses spook at. In Jennifer's case, with her new horse, it's donkeys. That horse is petrified of donkeys. I don't know if it was turned out with donkeys. This horse is, 16 hands and a big horse, and he just doesn't like little donkeys.
I haven't exposed him to minis yet, so he may have a mini phobia, too. Yeah, we don't know.
Well, hey, the I was looking on here and somebody actually wrote this. Duke, our trusty horse I bought from Betty Faye, he is spookless. He is bomb-proof. He's amazing. Nothing spooks him until I was taking him on a trail. And there were not one, but two pigs on the right side of the road. And that typically does not... They were in their... In their pig pen, but they're right outside the road. And we've ridden by these pigs 100 times, never bothered them. They were doing it.
Oh, no!
Have you ever heard pigs do it?
Yes, it's very loud.
It's terrifying.
It sounds like a child having their toenails plucked out.
It's the worst thing ever, ever, ever. And let me tell you, Duke was never the same when we walked by those pigs ever again. And
traumatized.
So, screwing pigs. Is that can we say that?
I guess we can. You just did. Yeah.
These are funny.
Here, Robin sent this one, said, "Those damn songbirds used to scare the crap out of Tango. A bear or a wild pig, no big deal. But songbirds, hated songbirds." What did a songbird ever do to Tango?
Lois posted his own fart. I've seen horses spook at their own fart.
You know, a lot of horses spook at carts. When I first got the cart, my first pony, we used to go on trail rides with a lot of people, and the horses would all spook at the cart to begin with. But then by the end of the ride, they would all be gathered behind the cart, kind of as a safety zone. And then it becomes a safety thing. After horses see them for a little bit, it kind of becomes a safety thing. Bicycles, you know, there's always that bicycle thing going on.
Yeah.
Horse people.
Yeah. Bikes are always really scary. I my dog, I have Brett, we're on a trail ride and Brett coughed like a hack puke kind of thing. And I was riding my horse to mirror. Oh my God, he took off. I was like, "Did you just seriously spook at a dog coughing?" Really?
Jennifer Beeker never spooked it much. He was, you know, Beeker was the ace trail rider, but there was one thing in the woods out here that got him.
Oh, the feral cattle. Yeah.
We had feral cattle in the woods.
Oh my gosh.
Wild cows. Now that's not something you see every day. I think any horse would be freaked out by seeing cows in
They're
the woods.
They're like Mustang cows?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
They escaped apparently and lived off the land.
Off the land.
Gypsy cattle.
Awesome. His own shadow. Scooter kind of freaks at his own shadow. If there's a lot of shadows around, he'll freak it down.
Lindsay nailed this one. Llamas. She says that passing the llama farm was a guaranteed spook. We called it llama trauma.
You know, it's funny, the things you post on Facebook that really resonate. And this one apparently really resonated because we had one once
was afraid of leg wraps when they were on his legs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Thor's dealing with that right now. Back boots. That's terrifying. Funny.
Well, if you want to hear tomorrow morning, we'll be here with the Horse Husbands episode. We recorded it last night. We're changing up the Horse Husbands episode a little bit. Timothy and I are still hosting, but we're inviting two other horse husbands. In this case, we have Colleen Rutledge's husband, Brian, on. And we also have a very special guest who is the father and husband of auditors. So he is joining us tomorrow. Well, you have to tune in to see who that is. And we are doing a roundtable now. So we're kind of changing up the format of the show a little bit. And we're just doing a roundtable. We're bringing up some topics and we're doing a roundtable.
Are you just sitting around complaining about horse chicks?
They're sitting around shooting the crap with a beer is what they're doing.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And of course, as usual, there are no women allowed and women are not allowed to listen. So that's on tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. You might hear what our least favorite barn chore is to do was one of the questions, which invoked a whole conversation. By the way, Timothy definitely comes, Lisa Wallace's husband, definitely comes across as the most loving and hardly ever wants to say anything bad about her at all. He's very careful. So we busted his chops a little bit for that last night, too.
Gotcha.
So you'll hear that tomorrow morning on the show. And then Friday, it's Really Bad Ads. Doesn't it seem like 12 years since we did Really Bad Ads? It's only been like we missed a week. But we'll be back tomorrow with Really Bad Ads. Send them in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And the prize this month is a box of crap from my closet. But actually, it's a pretty good box of crap this month. So tune in on Friday for that.
Just so you know, too, before we go, we talked about on the last show we did, I don't know when that was, a month ago, that we were trying to figure out what names to show my two Mustangs with. I just wanted to let you guys know that we came up with the names, and most of them were just suggestions from you guys. But I ended up keeping Zeus the Mustang and the Mighty Thor. So I had to go with the Mighty Thor.
I like them.
Okay. Perfect. I think those were your suggestions. And not that I want to give you credit for anything you do right, but we went with that.
Ha! I win.
I think it was your wife. I win the rest of the day.
Yay.
Oh, sorry, Jen. All right. You know what? I get to go. So see you later. Spay, neuter, geld, have a great day.
Well, I can't think of a better way to close out the show then.
I'll have to fill up a show with that.
Stop that playing in the background if you're doing your massage test.